From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big sports encompass a lot these days. Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans last night even had its own 38-minute blackout in the Superdome. But there's more than scores and running backs running through sports these days. There are lots of high-level politics, big political and cultural issues, from gay rights to immigration to big money, war, guns. This hour On Point, big sports and big politics. You can join the conversation. Is there any way for sports and athletes to be held apart from our big political issues? Should they be? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Yes, there was football last night, and it was pretty exciting. The Baltimore Ravens won the 47th Super Bowl, beating out the San Francisco 49ers 34-31. In the final seconds of the game, 49ers wide receiver Ted Ginn Jr. tried to make it to the end zone. Unfortunately, he was tackled midfield.
Ginn to the 40. Still on his feet at the 50.
Big crowd, big cheers, big win for the Ravens, but there were politics of all kinds all around this thing, not least politics around football itself and whether its physical price, the physical price paid by players, has made it a kind of a gladiatorial sport, unacceptable in the modern era. Here was NBC sportscaster Bob Costas Sunday on Meet the Press, asked about the ongoing safety concerns in the NFL. Costas did not mince words.
For all the drama, the excitement, the strategy, all the appealing things about football, the way football is currently played in the NFL is fundamentally unsustainable.
And then, you name it, war, military service, veterans. Oprah narrated last night's commercial for Jeep, which showed members of the U.S. military coming home from overseas, from battle, in time for the Super Bowl.
Half the battle is just knowing. This is half the battle. Because when you're home, we're more than a family. We are a nation.
And before the game even got started, really arresting image, pregame performance, Sandy Hook Elementary School choir on the field in New Orleans. Those survivors of the terrible shooting in December singing America the Beautiful along with Jennifer Hudson. What did you feel when those kids were singing? What did that mean exactly? And of course, Jennifer Hudson, who also lost her mother and brother and 7-year-old nephew to gun violence in this country. Joining me from Washington now, Dave Zirin. He's sports editor at The Nation magazine, hosts the Sirius XM satellite radio show Edge of Sports Radio. His latest book is Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. Dave Zirin, welcome to On Point.
Oh, great to be here, Tom.
More political emanations off that whole scene last night than I, for one, could count. What were you seeing there, Dave?
I was seeing exactly what you're talking about. Amidst a huge explosion of politics and political debates that are currently enveloping this country, a football game somehow managed to break out.
Yes, a football game breaks out, and it was exciting play on the field. If you're into football, there was a lot of excitement there, and yet the wrapper of politics around this and many more political events just seems to get more thick and dense and rich and crowded almost every time out, Dave.
I mean, on this, you can really pick the issue. Whatever one's pet issue is, in some respects, was represented by this Super Bowl. We could tick them off. I mean, you mentioned the issue of gun violence that was so represented so stirringly before the game even began. We could talk about the issue of concussions and the way that the NFL has morphed over the last century between from being a sport that was played on the Ivy League pastures of places like Harvard and Yale as a way to toughen up the children of elites for a future of running the United States, to a place where more and more middle-class families are actually pulling their kids out of football because of the prospect of brain injuries. And there are a whole host of other issues as well that came up in this game. And it was punctuated so strongly by this 38-minute blackout that occurred in the third quarter, which to me, even though the announcers didn't say it, and brought up so many memories of New Orleans, so many memories of Hurricane Katrina, so many, because of course the game was played at the New Orleans Superdome,
yep,
and so many memories of the devastation that that city suffered 7.5 years ago.
I mean, you couldn't help thinking of all that last night. I don't know exactly what happened with those lights, but yes, we remember when the Superdome was just a wreck with the roof pulled off of it by Mother Nature. And I mean, last night, you know, 38-minute blackout in the middle of the biggest sports event in the country. Respect to New Orleans, but that's kind of third worldy, isn't it, Dave?
It's so interesting because oftentimes when countries like South Africa and India host these kinds of mega events, whether it's the Olympics or the World Cup or what have you, the statement is always made in the Western press that, gee, maybe a developing nation isn't ready to host an event like this. Well, what did that blackout really say about the United States? Are we overdeveloped as a nation? Are we underdeveloping? Are we de-developing as a country right now? I mean, I think that's what's really going to be remembered from this game, not the 34-31 thrilling victory of the Ravens, not the MVP performance of Joe Flacco, not the great comeback by the 49ers, but the fact that it seemed like it was a symbolic moment of American declinism. I mean, we can't keep the lights on for the Super Bowl.
I mean, we hope that's not what it is. And yet, that was big, and that was long, and then there's the big issue enveloping the whole thing, in football at least, and we'll get beyond football. But just the damage that gets done to people, we saw some big hits last night. I mean, people are thinking about this in a new way. Presidents talked about it recently and a lot more beyond. Here's a little clip. This was a Dallas Cowboys game in November. Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Michael Vick was brought down by the Cowboys' Ernie Sims left Vick with a concussion that prevented him from playing for the rest of the season.
Yeah, Ernie Sims is trying to hold him up, but right at the end of that, as he's going to the ground, you see his helmet snap into the turf. You know, we'll find out exactly what it is that they're checking.
So Michael Vick is being evaluated in the locker room. They're checking him for a concussion. Now, his helmet came up and hit him in the eye, and he lost some vision as well.
Michael Vick and many, many, many other football players suffering immediate and long-term consequences from this sport that the country so well loves, that I played, that I love, and yet it's made a lot of people think. I mean, here's that sort of, you know, the parallels being drawn. 2000 film Gladiator, Russell Crowe plays a slave forced to fight to the death in a public arena. Here he is after having just killed his opponent in front of a packed, enthusiastic stadium.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Isn't the violence why you're here watching? I mean, Dave Zirin, this is running beneath football like no time I can remember in my lifetime now, this concern.
And Tom, I could make the case that you're being too hard on the old gladiator spectacles in comparison with the NFL, because at least the gladiator spectacles, everyone knew what they were watching. It was explicitly that kind of blood sport, while the NFL goes out of its way to actually hide the effects that players go through and has been hiding those effects for decades, and tries to package it as the kind of family-friendly spectacle while trying to shield people from the real-life effects of this kind of almost cartoonish violence that you see on the field. You're right that it's never been more a subject of discussion than now. I mean, but the reason why it's such a discussion is that there's been half a dozen suicides in the last year by current and former players, including future Hall of Famer Junior Seau. And you have 4,000 former players who are now suing the league for saying they hid information about the effects of brain injury. And Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League, you know, they're feigning all this concern about it. But when he was asked by Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation yesterday, so you do now see a connection between the NFL and these post-concussive syndromes, he would not answer that question directly, sounding a lot like the old tobacco company executives who wouldn't admit a connection between smoking and lung cancer.
Kind of, I don't know, backpedaling or side-pedaling there. On the other hand, there's a lot more talk about it than ever. And around the Super Bowl, I mean, the president sitting down, the Super Bowl, of course, on CBS, the president sitting down with CBS to do an interview right before the game. every kind of political message in the air around this thing yesterday. Those ads, whether it's Oprah talking about military service, wow, was that a different welcome home from Vietnam days? Or Paul Harvey brought back to talk about American farmers. I mean, everybody trying to get their piece. Why is a sporting event such a target for political messages these days, Dave?
Well, the number one reason, I think, is that our popular culture has become incredibly splintered in this country. I mean, if you look at things like television ratings on the networks, they're just a fraction of what they were even 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. Sports ratings across the board are also a fraction of what they were 10 years ago. The only place that has sort of retained this kind of national gaze is the Super Bowl. It's, in a lot of ways, the closest thing we have to a mass secular holiday in this country. The overnight ratings, we just got them in, are the highest in the history of the Super Bowl. That means more American eyes were on that game last night than have ever been on any single thing in the history of the United States.
And then, right in the middle of it, Beyonce, you know, girl power, sexy, sublime. She goes from singing the national anthem to bringing it on, hot and wonderful at halftime, but there's a whole gender politics vein as well. Dave Zirin's new book is Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. Here's Beyonce at halftime. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Must be pursued, it must be wooed with all of one's might and every bit of effort that we have. And each day there's a new encounter, each week is a new challenge.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about big sports and big politics. The voice of Vince Lombardi brought back there, legendary Green Bay Packers coach at halftime in Super Bowl 47. It's kind of the warm-up act for Beyonce as she took the stage. Excellence must be pursued, must be wooed with all one's might. And then on came the dancing girls and guys and all the rest. David Zirin is writing about politics and how they have come well into sports stadia and arena all over this country in his new book, Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. Of course, the first impulse last night from the NFL was the wonderment of football itself. Here's an ad featuring actor Wendell Pierce for the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl! We got a shot to be world champs!
How bad do you want it today? Ah!
They want to prove something simple. That they're better than us.
Set the minutes of glory!
It's time to be the best!
Being here today is the supreme testament to their excellence, their survival skills, and above all, their destiny.
Yeah!
It's the biggest party of the year in a city where partying is in our blood.
Everybody is watching, baby! This is it!
It's Super Bowl Sunday. No bigger game. No better setting. To define themselves forever.
Excellence and first-class partying in New Orleans at the Super Bowl. Dave Zirin's new book is Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Let's go to Michigan. Mark is calling from Houghton, Michigan. Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I've got a couple comments about the football players. First of all, I don't think the comparison to gladiators is fair, just because gladiators were forced to be there, and all football players are there by choice, and they get paid millions of dollars to be there, and, you know, they love it. They're there by choice, and they could leave at any time if they really wanted to. That's fair.
Yeah, they're by choice, but you know the argument that says, well, for kids in lousy schools in the inner city, how many really good options do they have? What about that, Mark?
Yeah, I suppose that's true, but football players who are professionals now playing in the NFL, I think, I'm talking more about them, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, go on, Mark.
About football players who are suing the league after they retire because the league withheld information. I think that's just ridiculous. I mean, if they're saying that they didn't know that being smashed into by a 250-pound linebacker constantly was going to result in brain injuries. I think that's just a ridiculous statement. Of course it's going to lead to damage later on. They knew that.
Oh, we see that it does. I don't know how much they knew, but it sure is punishment. Dave Zirin, this isn't gladiators. They're free actors. They're there by choice and ridiculous to sue. Everybody can see that it's not patty cake.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL's own neurologist said for years, until 2009, that there is actually no correlation between playing in the NFL and post-concussive syndromes. And let's talk about what those post-concussive syndromes are. Early onset dementia, early onset Alzheimer's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, otherwise known as ALS. I mean, to say that players in the 70s and 80s were aware that that could be the result of playing in the National Football League is patently ridiculous. It wasn't neuroscience that people had, and it was nothing that people could have possibly expected would be the result of playing in the National Football League. And this is where you get to that issue of informed consent. I mean, if players were not aware of this, and if the NFL had the neurological research that said that this could be the result of what took place unofficially, then yeah, the NFL should have to pay out the nose for that.
And they're not gladiators. They can walk off that field anytime.
Well, that's an easy thing to say. It's a lot tougher when you look at the kind of sacrifices that are made by NFL players to actually get there and the absence of choices. You know, I think almost 100 pro athletes in basketball in the NFL, come from the little strip of land known as the Gulf that was hit particularly hard by Hurricane Katrina. And I asked a coach down there why that was the case. And he said to me, well, when you have poverty and year-round sunshine, you have the perfect soil to make professional athletes. I mean, you have to look at this much more contextually in terms of why people actually play professional sports. You're right, they're not gladiators and that they're not conscripted to be there. But you also need to understand that to talk about it in terms of just choice and they could quit if they want to is a little too blithe for my taste.
Let's go to New Orleans where the big game was last night. Andrew's calling from New Orleans. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm
sure.
Calling you from Ferret Street, uptown New Orleans. So we're right in the heart of the city itself. And
great.
We've had a lot of issues dealing with post-Katrina in relation to, you know, where, you know, it's been the best of times. It's been the worst of times. And the best of times, of course, was the Saints winning the Super Bowl. And I hate to say that that was the best of times, but It really meant a lot. It was
sure.
Really part of who we are and defines us. Yet, we also have failing schools, crumbling infrastructure, and power lines, as we saw last night, that are just on par with a developing nation. And it, you know, I could take some offense by you referring to us as being that as a developing nation. How embarrassing was that? But that's also who we are. I mean, we've got our warts and all. And I as a New Orleanian and as an American, it's becoming more and more of a Hunger Game-esque, or to use that book or that model in which you can see the NFL and you can see politics and the media is using this as an entertainment device to get their messages across. I mean, of course they're going to. I mean, that's if you look at how any government structure has been developed through time, they're going to, you know, the Coliseum existed 2,000 years ago and we have the Superdome. So there's parallels throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, Superdome sitting right there in New Orleans, and no offense intended. We're just trying to stare straight at what's going on here, and I don't know exactly why it happened, but it's pretty weird for the sort of jewel in the crown of national sports to have it happen. Andrew, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here, Dave, from New Orleans. Kayla, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in. I appreciate you bringing up this topic because earlier you said that, you know, more Americans watch the Super Bowl than anything else in the history of America. And the fact that football brings so many people together from so many different places, you know, I live in New Orleans, but I'm a white girl from the Midwest. But I can talk to anyone I meet, you know, like an older African-American man from the inner city of New Orleans. And I can say, hey, what do you think about the game?
Yeah.
And that brings us together. And the fact that, you know, things like gun violence or, you know, vets returning home, all these really important issues are being discussed in a venue that every American is participating in, and yep. I think it provides an opportunity for us to really reflect on what it means to be an American.
So at least it gets us together to talk. What did you think, Kayla? I don't know if you saw it last night. Maybe you were, you know, making a dip, or I don't know. But when the young children from Newtown, Connecticut, Sandy Hook, where all the killings were, when they were singing on the field, how did that strike you? What did that mean, Kayla?
I think that was just a beautiful and the country to kind of like we said, come together and say that we are American, argue about things, but ultimately we do have a unifying culture, and we do mourn for each other when tragedies just like that happened. And I was actually very, very to kind of allow that kind of
Kayla, you're breaking up on us, so I got to jump in. I'm sorry. I mean, there's no question those kids were beautiful, and you couldn't help being moved by seeing them with those fresh faces in spite of everything that happened in their hometown. At the same time, I didn't know Dave Zirin quite how to read it, whether this was exploitation, saying, you know, the kids are all right, everything's all right, even though, you know, 20 died like 5 minutes ago, or whether this was, as Kayla says, a way for us to join hands again across the country and, you know, commit to the safety of kids. I didn't know what to make of it.
Well, I think it's somewhere in between there, because on the one hand, it's like, yes, we should acknowledge that Newtown happened. We should acknowledge that gun violence is a crisis in this country. I'm sure the NRA was not happy to see that before the Super Bowl, and therefore that makes me happy that it was there before the game. But at the same time, you notice no mention of Javon Belcher, the Kansas City Chiefs player who had a small arsenal of guns in his house, killed the mother of his four-month-old child, and then went down to Arrowhead Stadium with the team facilities and took his own life in front of both his coach and his general manager. No mention of the fact that after that took place, a number of NFL players actually turned in their guns to their teams, saying, you know, given my temper, given how I feel after games, I don't trust myself having these things in the house. So no discussion of the fact that the NFL has its own problem with firearms. And that's the problem with it. It's like anything that's used to sort of shine up the league, that to me is where the line is. It's like, are you talking honestly about how these things actually affect the National Football League, or are you using this as a way to actually hide us from the fact that a lot of these issues exist?
Well, for that matter, there was no mention even really of what – there was no mention of what happened in Sandy Hook. They were just there from Sandy Hook. But as I recall, there was nothing said about gun violence, even though all those kids had come right out of that environment. And Jennifer Hudson, of course, had the terrible tragedy. Mother, brother, nephew, you know, all killed on the doorstep of her home. David in Charleston, South Carolina. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. You know, the comment I like to say, it was interesting driving my daughter to school when a radio disc jockey came on and said, you know, I can't go for either of these teams because their cities are so opposite of what my political affiliations are. And it was just it struck me, and it struck my daughter, you know, particularly being a progressive in South Carolina, how just odd that was that someone would actually be expressing that feeling. And my other comment is, being in South Carolina and seeing that some of these guys in these really poor rural neighborhoods struggling to make it, and there's quite a few from here in South Carolina, to say that these guys would have any concept of what the injuries would be after they retired is really absurd. I don't think these kids are prepared at all. They start very, very young. It's their only hope for their families in many ways, and I just don't think they think long term, and I don't think they know enough to make the right decisions.
Well, I take your point, David. On the other hand, a lot of people in football and beyond thinking a lot about all kinds of things. I want to turn to some of that. Dave Zirin writes a lot about it in his book Game Over. I mean, not least on the Baltimore Ravens team, we had the linebacker there, Brendan Iambadejo, talking to CNN and everybody else about his support for gay marriage. Here he was. This is back in September, but he kept it up right up until Super Bowl season.
Back in 2009, I wrote an article for the Huffington Post, and if you talk to people about this issue, people made fun of me and said, oh, Brendan's coming out, or I'd hear kind of snickering in the background. And now I talk to my teammates and, you know, whereas 95% of the people were against it. Now it seems like 95% of the people are for it.
An NFL linebacker from the Baltimore Ravens talking about his support for gay marriage. There's political. In March last year, the Miami Heat NBA team posted a tribute to Trayvon Martin, a photo of the team, professional basketball players posing in hoodies with their heads bowed, and the hashtag #WeWantJustice after the infamous case with the Trayvon Martin, the teenager in the hoodie who died from gunfire. Sports journalist Skip Bayless told ESPN he had mixed emotions about whether the Miami Heat's team photo was the right move.
Is it possible that the Heat overreacted and that they ran the risk of helping fuel or spark a national lynch mob mentality wrongly? I don't know. Maybe they were right, but maybe they were wrong.
Professional athletes jumping in politically. Would they spark a national lynch mob mentality? Another case, 2010. Dave Zirin writes about it. Phoenix Suns, Arizona's NBA team, took a stand against Arizona's anti-immigration legislation by wearing jerseys that didn't say the Suns, but said Los Suns. Kind of Spanish. Here's one of their big stars at the time, Amar Stoudemire.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great to wear Los Suns, to let the Latin community know that we're behind them 100%, and we're showing great support.
Amari Stoudemire of the Suns, Los Suns. Greg in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Greg, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
I'm calling. You mentioned that these are political issues, whether it's gay marriage or the Trayvon Martin and several others.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these are moral issues. And to have a voice speaking out about an issue with a moral voice is very healthy.
Is it the right thing for professional athletes? Should we welcome it?
Why
it's
not?
A democracy. Everybody's in on it. Or is Absolutely. It not what you want from sports, Greg?
It's free speech, for one thing. We live in a country that exhorts free speech, so I have no problem, especially since they have a bully pulpit that reaches mm-hmm. out to so many other people.
I appreciate your call from Pittsburgh, Greg. Dave, is this growing? We can think all the way back to, black fists raised in Mexico City at the Olympics. Is political outspokenness growing in the sports world?
It is growing. And I do want to say first that you got to look at people like Brendan Iambadejo or the Miami Heat and what they did in standing with the family of Trayvon Martin as part of a historical continuum. You can't think about the civil rights movement without thinking about Jackie Robinson, or the 1960s without thinking about Muhammad Ali, or the women's movement without thinking about people like Billie Jean King or Martina Navratilova. And your last caller was absolutely correct. I mean, there is this bully pulpit. Oftentimes, athletes only use it to sell us things with swooshes on them.
Mm.
The fact that they're using it, and the fact that, let's face it, athletes are role models whether we want them to be or not. So wouldn't we rather them model political engagement and caring about the world instead of having the latest car or the coolest shoes?
Or the land of the free. And of the brave.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The day after the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 47, we're talking about the intersection of big sports and big political, cultural issues in our country and beyond, about politics and sports. Dave Zirin writes about it in his new book, Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. A lot of people were looking to sway you last night, whether they were selling Oreos or beer or Jeep vehicles around Oprah and vets, or for that matter, pickup trucks. Radio broadcaster Paul Harvey was brought back for a Dodge Ram pickup truck commercial from a speech, So God Made a Farmer, that he'd made to the Future Farmers of America convention in 1978. There it was, Super Bowl 47, 2013, with lots of sort of wonderful images of farmers behind it.
And on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a caretaker. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody willing to sit up all night with a newborn colt and watch it die, then dry his eyes and say, maybe next year.
Paul Harvey there last night in a long ad all about farmers. Listen, I'm a sucker for that one, but it's just amazing how many political issues gather around here. And beyond the Super Bowl, players themselves going directly into politics. Think last October, the Obama campaign. This is in the final run-up to the presidential election. Obama's campaign released a video featuring NBA players endorsing President Obama for re-election. Alonzo Mourning, Dante Jones, Etan Thomas, Kim Hampton, Vince Carter.
I believe America is still the greatest country in the world. And I am voting for President Obama.
Because he led us through the tough times. Because he has a game plan for the future.
Because he knows this country succeeds when everyone gets a fair shot.
Because he will keep this country the greatest.
NBA players stepping up for the president, but before the Super Bowl yesterday, internet email messages going out from conservative groups desperate to raise money to run ads against Obama during the Super Bowl festivities. David in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention two things. First of all, if it's okay for politicians and movie stars to make political comments, I see no reason why a sports figure can't. And also, I'm hearing a lot about sometimes youth that play sports the only way out of an inner city or whatever.
Yeah.
There's also an academic way out of their situation to help their families and things like that.
Yes.
We don't stress on the academic way. We stress everything on the sports way that they're going to get out of their situation.
Point taken, David. I mean, definitely free speech for everybody. If athletes want to speak up, of course, there's some ambivalence about the academic way and just how academic it really is. Dave Zirin, I mean, you're not saying athletes shouldn't talk about politics. I kind of read you saying the opposite.
Oh, yeah. And I think the caller realizes that. I think it's obvious that I think that when athletes speak about politics, it actually serves to reclaim politics from just like the people with the bad haircuts on Capitol Hill and turns it into something far more collective and interesting. And frankly, I think there's a reason why when athletes speak about politics, it has so much more resonance than, say, when a movie star does. Because I think that there's recognition that when an athlete does it, they really are risking something because their time in the spotlight usually is so narrow and that they really are taking a chance.
Are they really? I mean, do people shut him down? Has the Ravens linebacker paid a price for speaking up for gay marriage?
See, but that's the great thing about a movement. Like, he's speaking in the context where there is a movement, and I think the team recognizes and the league recognizes that they actually would pay a price if they did clamp him down. But when other players, and I could give examples, have spoken out in the absence of a movement, they can find themselves isolated and shunned and pushed to the margins.
Let's go to Laurel in Hampton, Virginia. Laurel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, John.
Hi.
My comment is, about the politics of with the football, and I think it's a good idea because it's such a wide, everybody's watching.
Right.
But I have to take issue with the commercial with Oprah Winfrey talking about the veterans.
What about it? I mean, she was essentially saying, "Let's welcome them home with open arms and love." It was kind
right.
of touching, wasn't it?
But. I was watching it with my son-in-law, who is an Afghanistan veteran,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, "So what's this commercial? Wait a minute! Oh, it's to sell a Jeep." He said, "Oh, and then since Oprah put her name on it, I guess that makes it all like legit." And everything she said was wonderful, but it's to sell a Jeep, and I thought, wouldn't it have been so much nicer to actually say welcome home and talk about them and not be selling anything?
Yeah, I know what you mean, Laurel. I understand that ambivalence. I appreciate your call mm-hmm. as well. I mean, Dave, it's interesting. People climbing onto everything here, advertisers climbing onto the sport. And then the sport itself, kind of climbing onto military service. There was that shot before the game began of Americans watching at Camp Courage in Afghanistan. And then Jeep, Now, you could look at it a lot of ways. They spent a lot of money to give a warm nod to returning veterans. It's hard to argue with that, but Laurel's not so sure she wants it to sell Jeeps.
No, and if you want to find somebody who's very cynical about the way the armed forces are used to sell products, not to mention sell the National Football League, always good to start with a soldier or a veteran, because that's something that you live with a lot in the U.S. Army, partly because it is a respected institution in U.S. society that so many other forces and corporate interests try to glom onto it as a way to get some of its reflected shine. And at the same time, there is a longstanding commercial intent entanglement with the armed forces and the National Football League that goes back decades, and yet their most recent joint work, which was announced at the start of this season, is that it's found that traumatic brain injury, very similar kinds of traumatic brain injury, are seen both in the armed forces in Afghanistan and in the National Football League. So they're actually combining their medical research and engaging in a joint partnership with the National Institute for Health. So we have a real connection between those two forces, and it's a very dark one.
That's pretty wild. IEDs, those explosives along the road, and all the head injuries in the military, and then the injuries on the football field. Rollo, lots of people writing along here. Rollo says, hearing those kids from Sandy Hook singing before the game, how ironic. This listener writes, football is part of the violence problem that engulfed that school. I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch.
Maybe that's a stretch.
But on the other hand, we do have a violence culture in our country. There's no question.
We do, and yet in a lot of inner city neighborhoods, kids play football as an escape from that violence.
Trying.
And it's seen, and that's not something necessarily to celebrate. I mean, it would be great if there were all kinds of art and music institutions that kids could do as an escape from gangs or street violence. But the tragedy, and this is what I would say to the caller before who talked about, well, academics is also a way out of poverty, is that I could give you examples of high schools around the country that money is raised and goes into the football team and the football field and doesn't go into academics. You have horrific class sizes. You have just a thuddingly horrible regimen of standardized testing, and you have very little in the way of the kind of fun and creative expression and fellowship that people can find through athletics.
It's a mixed up deal. Lots of fun and fellowship, though, around this game last night, I am sure, and at the same time, all kinds of political emanations and facets here. Let's go to Boston. Mark is calling. Mark, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I was an athlete during the when the 1968 Olympics happened, and our three warriors got up there and did the Black Power salute. And I'm not a person of color, but I will tell you, up to that time, I fit the jock stereotype to a T. You know, no mm-hmm. brains. And but seeing that, it had a profound effect on my life, and it took a certain direction that it never would have taken. You know, I opened up myself up to history, philosophy, and to know what the real history of this Black liberation struggle was about.
And all of that inspired in you, Mark, by your fellow, Olympic teammates, African-American in Mexico City with their fists raised?
Putting themselves out there. You know how hard that must have been, you know?
Well, and, I can say I know how hard that must have been, because that was my last book, was John Carlos's memoir, who was mm-hmm. one of the people on that medal stand.
With Tommy Smith and Peter Norman.
Yeah, and John Carlos really, I mean, you're absolutely right. John Carlos really did sacrifice, and he spent a lot of years in the wilderness and had a lot of years of pain as repercussions and punishment for what he did. But like John Carlos says now, he says, you know, I have no regrets whatsoever. The people who have regrets were the people who were there in 1968 and did nothing.
What did it cost him? I mean, what was the aftermath?
Well, in the aftermath, he first of all, there was poverty. He couldn't find work. There was nothing he could do to provide for his family, completely blackballed and shut out. He was tailed by the FBI. He was seen as a threat to the country, so there was a constant surveillance presence. And then in 1977, his wife, she took her own life, just as a result of the pressures and everything that was collapsing around them. So it was a lot. It was a lot.
Much easier today for athletes to speak up, and that looks like a good thing to me. Ted in Portsmouth, Virginia. Ted, you're on the air.
I personally want to ask a quick question and make a statement.
Mm-hmm.
First off, the athletes themselves going for it and standing up for something is a great and wonderful thing. But when you start getting corporations that delve into politics, I think that's taking things a little bit too far. The next one is...
But corporations are all over our politics, Ted.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm saying. They are all over our politics. Once you have that ability, and to be honest, that amount of money to put toward that ability, that kind of makes politics a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for?
Tainted.
Misrepresented.
Well, but these athletes have a lot of money themselves, not corporate scale, but awfully big, Ted.
And yes, they do. They have a lot of money, but it's their money. See what I'm getting at here? If I, as an individual, want to take every dime that I have and put it toward a political statement, that's my prerogative. But when you start getting corporations that step in and say, this is what we stand for, and this is what you should stand for as well, that's taking things a little bit too far.
Ted, I appreciate your call. Dave Zirin, how do you see these things sorting out? You've got more athletes speaking out on all kinds of issues. You've certainly got corporate money on all kinds of issues, and you've got the two mixed together in the world of sports.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with the caller that I see a line and a difference between an athlete, particularly, say, let's take the NFL as an example, whose career will only last on average 3.5 years, who does not have a guaranteed contract, and who's actually risking something by speaking out for what they believe. Whether I agree with it or not, there's something admirable about them using their platform to do that. I distinguish between that and a corporation saying, like Jeep, saying, you know what, people love the Army. And so let's say something nice about the Army, and then maybe they'll also love Jeep. Like, I mean, you're right that they're delving into politics, but to paraphrase Mitt Romney, I mean, corporations are not people, my friend.
Well, I guess that's the opposite of what Mitt Romney had to say. But,
yeah, to turn it the other way around.
Let me get one more here. Harold in Greenwich, Connecticut. Harold, what do you think of sports and politics and all the razzmatazz?
Well, it's just an observation. I mean, nothing gets created by this. Nothing gets built. I mean, you might build a coliseum or something, but there's nothing of any substance that's essentially created. I mean, this might as well be worldwide wrestling in terms of what gets produced at the end of the day.
It's a big entertainment product. I guess you're saying that's ephemeral.
Yeah, it is. It is just like a movie. I mean, it's there are people who get jobs as a result of doing this, but to be putting so much of our societal interest into, you know, something like this that lasts 3 months out of the year, I've never appreciated the turn on to it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy sports. I watch, but it just doesn't turn me on like, you know, I'm going to do something wild.
Important out of it. Well, 3 months out of the year, and then there's the next sport, and then there's the next sport. What about it, Dave? Maybe something gets built politically for good or ill here out of the attention that's paid to it, though, and the messages around it.
No, I think that's right. I think that when you can harness that kind of attention and try to push it in a direction beyond just consumerism or eventually passing out on your sofa, I think that's has to be seen as a positive.
Where do you see positive messages in politics coming out of sports? And we recall that you write for The Nation, so you got your angle on this. But where do you see positive and where do you see troubling messages coming out of big sports?
Well, I think the most positive messages coming out of sports right now as we speak is that, you know, there's a growing movement for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered awareness, liberation, anti-bullying, equality in this country. And when that manages to find a foothold in the world of sports, that's actually really powerful because sports, particularly men's sports, has for so long been used as a way to construct a very certain kind of American masculinity. You know, the word sissy in this country was popularized by Teddy Roosevelt to describe people who did not play football.
Mm.
And so when you have people who are saying, you know what, your definition of manhood, which is being straight, first of all, and second of all, being comfortable with violence, these are definitions that we actually need to reexamine, not just because it's more equal or kind, but for the basic health of our species. I think that's something that's actually very positive.
So you're glad for the gay rights support in your case. What do you see that's troubling messages out of big sports?
Oh, I mean, the most troubling message, I think, at a big sports, there's so much of it, but you saw this, you see this in New Orleans, is this idea of using sports as a kind of neoliberal Trojan horse that says if you invest billions of dollars into stadiums, into the kind of infrastructure that can only narrowly be used by tourists, and that investment also gets put into private hands, that's somehow going to improve your city.
That what sort of pouring gas in the tank of mega sports is the way to go when there are so many things we could be investing in.
Yeah, and it creates a low wage, no benefit labor force, and it only widens the inequality gap in the United States.
Selling hot dogs not in the owner's box. You may be right. I guess that's just one of many messages.
I mean, there's so many. Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, people
we could be on for another hour.
We could indeed. David Zirin's new book, The Day After the Super Bowl, we're talking about it. Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. Dave, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, my privilege, Tom. Terrific show.
This is On Point.